Good morning. I'm Joseph Joel Marcus Buchanan here at the University of Florida, and I'm in charge of collecting African American history for research purposes. And this morning I have a distinct privilege to be sitting with the first African American who was admitted to the University of Florida more than 50 years ago. And his name is George Stark. Good morning, George.
Joel, hi. Thank you.
How are you this morning?
Great, thank you.
It's very kind and very a privilege that you're back at the University of Florida after 50 years. Where do you live now, George?
Silver Spring, Maryland, which is in the DC suburbs.
And how long have you been in that area?
Probably since the late 60s or early 70s.
And may I ask, what do we do? There, besides live there, your profession?
I'm an energy consultant, and I own a consultancy, the name of which is General Power Corporation. It's an outgrowth of having worked for a utility at some point, and consequently it's rather diverse area of business opportunities. And I'm also the managing member of an LLC, which is set up to provide green power. And currently we are developing a landfill gas to energy conversion for a Fortune 500 company, where we will generate on-site steam plus electric power, the effect of which is to take them off the grid, and we will be responsible to keep them running 24/7.
What is green power?
Well, I would say basically alternative energies, renewables, energy that has a lower carbon footprint, less carbon contributions to the atmosphere, but the key is renewables. And that could include things like solar, wind, wave, and in our case, methane that is generated through the landfill process.
Thank you for that answer. Your presence here today is very significant to the history of the University of Florida, because one, you were the first student that applied and enrolled at the University of Florida, and you were here. And I guess the thing I would be asked as a historian, I'm asked quite frequently, and I'll ask you, what motivated you to attend the University of Florida? And after you decided to come here, what was it like when you got here? So one is, why did you simply decide to come to the University of Florida?
Well, first thing, Joel, even in mentioning my name, I use George H. Stark, Jr., because that's the name, well, it's my name, but it's also the one that's in all of the public records.
George H. Stark.
Right, Jr. All right. I'm not certain that I may have been the first applicant. There were, I'm sure, others ahead of me. I don't know about that same year. But what had happened is that once I had decided that what I wanted to do is become a lawyer, I applied to three law schools, Northwestern, I think Washington University in St. Louis, and during those days, there were a lot of newspaper articles about the progress of Virgil Hawkins's various suits through the different courts within the state. And a decision had been made earlier that the University of Florida would not be violating the law if it admitted minority students. And at that day, in those times, they were thinking about African Americans. So, that being the case, I also applied to the University of Florida, three schools, and I was accepted by all three. And I said, well, there's no question about which one I'm going to go to. And that, of course, was the University of Florida. A funny thing happened on the way here in the sense that I was in Atlanta at the time, and when I had to take the LSAT, I just thought about this yesterday when I was talking to somebody, when I had to take the LSAT, it was given at the University of South Carolina, and that was probably in 1957, and they were not as forward-thinking about matters at that time as I think the University of Florida was. But I remember standing on the corner talking with three guys from West Point because all the other people who were there were ignoring me, which was okay. I mean, that wasn't important, but I did find three people that I was talking with. And I noticed that there was a car full of black people going to work. They kind of slowed down when they saw me, and they drove around the block and came back and said, "Say, mister, would you mind coming over to the car?" And I went over and they said, "Look, I have to tell you, you can't stand on that corner." I said, "What's the problem?" And I knew what he was talking about, but I really didn't believe him. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Well, the problem is that they don't want any black people on their property unless they work there." And I said, "Okay, well, thanks very much." And anyway, they were really proven to be true, because, and even prophetic, because when we went into the auditorium to be indoctrinated about the exam, I heard somebody behind me in an aisle making the noise like "sss, sss." And I knew who he was doing that to, but I decided to make him, to ignore him and make him come out and do that in front. So he came down the aisle and then he stopped at my row and he got my attention and he did like this and he did it with a smile. So I asked, "Do you mean me?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Come in." So on the way down the hall, he was taking me out of the auditorium. And he said, "Look, this isn't my doing," he said, "but we haven't integrated the University of South Carolina, and you're not going to be permitted to take the LSAT here." He said, "But you'd be very happy to know we've made alternative arrangements." So I followed him in my car downtown to the office of the Secretary of State of the state of South Carolina, who had probably given them consent to use by prior arrangement, maybe on a standby basis, because certainly he wouldn't know. And what they did was they escorted me into his office, and I took the exam at the desk of the Secretary of State of the state of South Carolina, and they sent for a proctor who turned out to be the principal of a high school. So that was a kind of an interesting side story about how I got to the University of Florida and having to go through that type of experience. But nothing like that happened here.
Really? Did you find that disturbing to you, or you were just willing to do what you have to do to get here?
My attitude was it was just one of those things. I was there to take the test. As they pointed out to me, I had air conditioning and the other people didn't. You know, small matters. But no, it was just something that happened.
Prior to getting here, where was your home again in Florida?
I'm from Orlando.
All right. Yeah. And are you the only child?
Yes, my mother and father were divorced. And he practiced medicine in Sanford, and I spent time with him. And I grew up in Orlando, and went away to high school in North Carolina, and from there to Morehouse, and from there to the Air Force, and back to Morehouse, and then here.
Did you discuss coming to the University of Florida with your parents, or with your mother or father?
Both.
Both.
And my father was in favor of it because he had grown up here in Melrose, outside of Gainesville, and had wanted to come to school here all of his life and couldn't, so he was happy that I had the opportunity to do so. And later, it made it possible for him to be able to attend some of the seminars and other things at the medical school, which he thought was very useful. And naturally, he felt that something that should have happened earlier, but when he came along, he had to go to Florida anyhow. And there was a compact between Florida, Georgia, Alabama, and maybe other southern states as well, that people who wanted to become doctors in that era, they paid their way to go to medical school in Tennessee. And that way that would relieve the pressure of continuous applications, because these would be the rules, and people who qualified were given the subsidies to go away to school. And my mother had taken some correspondence courses here. She was a librarian in Orlando, and she had taken some correspondence courses here on library science. And that was at a time when they probably didn't even ask for racial identification. And because it was basically through the mail and on the phone. So that was interesting to her. But she was concerned about my safety, which I wasn't concerned about. So I broke the vote in favor of coming. Although it didn't turn out to be a vote. I mean, I was coming to the University of Florida, and both of them were very helpful once I made up my mind to do so.
When that decision was made by you to come here, and you applied, and was that done personally or by the mail, or how was that done? And did you have to take a series of tests to be admitted? And then if you were they done here on campus?
Well, at that time, I completed the forms that they sent, and which was essentially the same as what happened at the other two law schools, and each produced an acceptance, including this one. But I was kind of apprehensive when I opened the envelope, because I was afraid they were going to say no, but they didn't. But it was a typically form letter. No recognition to anything other than the fact that you've been admitted and classes start and you'll be getting additional information. Later, Jim Glass, who was a lawyer in Miami, was president of the Student Association. Well, maybe not the Student Association, but the Law School Student, Law Student mm-hmm. Association. And he came to see me. And his primary purpose was to give me background on what the university is like, answered all my questions. And I remember clearly that he said that nobody knows how this is going to turn out. But he said, of course, you'll have access to everything on campus that anybody else has. And you'll be free to live on campus if you want to attend any of the events and anything else. But I decided that since I had so many relatives here, I would stay with relatives, certainly initially. And that's what I did throughout the whole year and a half that I was a student here. And I stayed with different relatives at different times, which wasn't a problem. But and during the summer, I worked for a law firm in Miami, where one of the principals had been a judge, a black judge, probably the second black judge in the state. And but in any event, here I lived off campus, and as the course, as the work evolved, I wouldn't have had time to go into the other places anyway, because there just wasn't enough hours in the day to do your work, let alone go down looking, you know, experimenting with other things, even going to football games. I never went to any, because as much as I wanted to, that just wasn't something that law students did on Saturdays. Right. We were, in my case, we worked, studied 6.5 days a week, and midnight didn't mean anything except that the library was going to close. And we had study groups, and we would just rotate within our group to different houses after the library closed. And sometimes we wouldn't even go to the library, so that you just didn't have time.
Were you ever made to feel special or different because you were an African-American in the first?
Well, my goal had been to be treated like anybody else. And as far as I know, I was. People who were in my class who continued through would know better than I whether that was true or not. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't have any concerns about that issue. I think that some of the experiences that I had were a little bit different maybe from my classmates, primarily due to the pressures that were on me that were not on them. And just by virtue of being here, represented pressures, not in terms of relationships with the school, but in terms of the greater Florida society, with which I wanted nothing to do in that period, because I recognized it as a potential distraction. Time Magazine and New York Times and all those people with Carl wanted to do interviews, and I said, no, thank you. It just wasn't why I was here. When I finished, it could have been useful in building a practice, but until that happened, it would just be a distraction, so it didn't happen. But in terms of those pressures, they really became obnoxious, really, because things like gaining weight, you know, disproportionately, developing allergies that didn't relate to anything, like chocolate, grass, and feathers. I mean, what do you eat that does that? And since you're not around those things, why would you be allergic to them? But it was really a subtle expression of stress. And sometimes you don't even realize it, but you know that it's there. And I'll give you another example. There was a time when I'd studied everything there was to know about criminal law, and I just knew the type of cases that we would have to work through and come up with solutions and give our assessment of the facts and apply the law. And I wrote well, and I fully went in there intending and expecting to score as high as anybody and higher than most. That which was another compunction, and that was to just push, and do more than would be expected of me, mm-hmm. without making a big deal about it, but just do it through internal motivation. But that morning, I sat down, we had been given numbers to avoid the impression that the people's exams were being viewed at through biased eyes because the faculty was the faculty. They had been here during the course of 105 years when nobody like me was anywhere around. So none of them changed because of this one way or the other. So the dean at the time devised a system of grading where no names would be used, and instead everybody would draw a number, and that number would be recorded in the dean's office in great secrecy so that the instructors would not know whose papers they were grading. And I don't remember what my number was, but that was the number that followed me throughout my whole career here. And it was whatever. And that morning after that criminal law exam, I sat there, and the moment I sat down, blacked out totally. And I was really in a daze because nothing seemed to relate. We had the cases and the questions, but none of it registered at all. And what did register didn't register until I finally walked out the room, turned in my paper, and then walked out the room. But as I turned it in, I noticed that the only thing I had written on that exam was my number. And nothing like that had ever happened before or since. But I mean, these were peculiar things. And perhaps today, with more knowledge about psychology associated with even test taking, or but even more involved in that, things that can happen inadvertently in a pressure setting, I was probably the only one who recognized the pressure. I don't think Mr. Clark did. And I don't know that there would be anything he could do about it, but I would expect that given the nature of outreach today that's available as a resource, and to have a good mentor relationship with the faculty, because we only found one person who we felt would be comfortable acting as a mentor to us. We were glad we did find him, some of my friends. And he was Jewish, and I think he had a kind of an empathy that maybe some of the others may not have had because of their kind of history. But he was helpful, but there wasn't anything he could do about that particular situation.
Were you able to take the exam over later?
No.
You were not?
And I would expect that under other circumstances today, that would have been permissible. That's just, I don't know, but the answer is no. And I feel that had it happened, it would have made a great difference, because the moment I closed the door to walk out, all of the responses begin to just flow. And I should have captured them on that paper, but I just wasn't there. And it's because of the buildup of stress and pressures that were unique to me. Now, other people had difficulties, but they were just strictly based on the difficulties in studying law. But I had some of those difficulties, excelled in certain elements, so that everybody's difficulties were unique to them. But what the example I just gave you is one that was just pretty horrible. And I remember another incident where one of my friends reminded me, I just, over the course of a lifetime, suppressed so much of that, because the whole thing didn't turn out the way I wanted it to turn out. It was really life-changing for me. As I guess going to a university is life-changing for everybody. But in my case, it was initially more of a negative sort of a life change than a positive, because my goal had been to become a securities lawyer, move to Miami, and work in that industry with a law firm. But instead, because of the situation as it evolved, the time was such that you couldn't find a good job as a black person in Florida. And if you had certain expectations, you had to kind of migrate someplace. I went to Chicago, didn't like that. And I went to New York and liked that, so stayed until I came back to Washington, moved back to Washington years later. But the bottom line was that the other episode that I was reminded of, I had forgotten it totally. But my group has studied almost all night, one night in preparation for an exam. And we were really exhausted. I went home to take a shower and get dressed to come right back, and made the mistake at that point of laying down for 10 minutes. And the net effect of which was that that threw me 4 minutes off schedule to get back and park and get into the class. But I wasn't permitted to go back into the class. And there was nothing that I could do to get the exam rescheduled, because they said that you would be being treated differently from other people who got here 4 minutes before you did. And 4 minutes made the difference between whatever grade I would have earned, because I was thoroughly conversant with the material, and the zero. But that was then, and I certainly don't think that would happen today.
And with that experience you just brought to my attention, there was no discussing about if you could get in 4 minutes later or that you could take it later. It was just, that was it. It was over with.
Well, everything was pretty static and cut and dry. Naturally, I went to see the dean to describe what happened, and he genuinely, I felt, lamented the fact, but also felt that his hands were tied and that there was nothing could be done about it, because other people didn't go through what I went through in either case.
That's just amazing to hear you discuss that and the period of time you're talking about. Well, let's move back for a few moments now. You did the application, you got your acceptance. You came on campus. Was there any behavior that was different that you think because you have been admitted and this is the first in the history of the University of Florida? Now, of course, we know that Virgil Hawkins had applied several years preceding that, and we know that there were several cases that he had to deal with because of, I guess, because of skin color, and then also because of his academic records. So, all right, the University of Florida has admitted George W. Starr.
H.
Thank you. Excuse me. And he's the first person of color to be admitted. What was the reaction of the students on campus or even the population here in Gainesville?
Well, it was really very interesting because Jim Glass, as I told you, had come over and talked to me. But the university had made arrangements for me to get my books, for example, a day early on that Sunday. And the bookstore was open on University Boulevard, mm-hmm. University Avenue. And I was the only customer that day. We had an appointment, and we knew the books. So they had all ready to pull them together. And I brought a briefcase to put them in, and that was it, until the next day when I think one of my cousins dropped me off at the corner of 13th and
University,
because the law school was at that corner.
Okay.
At Bryan Hall at that time. So I remember walking toward the front door because I decided I just can't take a back seat on this bus. I would have to sit where I chose and not set any kind of adverse precedent. At least that thoughtful about where I wanted to do. But I guess throughout my undergraduate work, I always sat up front anyway, so it was just a habit. Unless it was alphabetical, which it wasn't here. Mm-hmm. So I saw the swarm of reporters on the front steps, and they were just looking everywhere, you know, but they didn't see me. And I was able to, because of the angle of the sidewalk and whatnot, and what I did was, side door was open, and I just went in the side door. And they were kind of flustered because they had wanted to ask you a lot of questions about mainly who are you, where you're from, and all that kind of stuff. But so I went in the side door and went in to sit down, maybe in the middle of the second row. Maybe it was really close to the first row. And a fellow came over and sat next to me who was president of the Florida Law Review. And I don't remember his name now, and he later has passed. But he introduced himself and told me that he was glad that I was here, and that the first chance he got, he wanted me to walk through the through their operations and get familiar with what they do and things of that nature. So that was good. And of course, everybody knew him, all the students. Well, maybe the new ones didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't new, but he just made it a point to do what he did. And but the fact that somebody came over and was talking was, I think, helpful in setting a tone in the auditorium. But at the same time, I learned later that the law school had been chosen as the first place to desegregate because it was really a logical thing to do, because the students were all college graduates. They all had determined goals for themselves, what they wanted to do career-wise. And they weren't going to do anything ridiculous to jeopardize that. So that atmosphere was kind of prevalent, even without my knowing it at the time, although I thought it. And I also think another thing that influenced my reception was the attitude of Governor Collins, whose attitude was totally positive about this whole thing, and Dr. Wright's. And you can, in a large organization, the personality of the people at the top tend to be reflected at certain levels, in certain ways. And had they been, had their attitudes been negative about this, then this whole thing would have been negative, but their attitude was positive. And the moment the legal issues had been resolved, it was clear that they had decided to do what they did and make sure that somebody who was qualified was admitted, which is what happened. So there wasn't anything untoward insofar as the relationships, but there was an incident though, because there was a couple of guys in our group who were obviously older than any of us. And one, when we were going through the line to pick up different paraphernalia, one was two or three people ahead of me, and another one was two or three people behind. And nobody paid much attention to them because they picked up packages too. And then they would, I noticed that one of them would always be in one of my classes. And they never seemed to be there at the same time. I noticed that they never, on reflection, they never spoke in class. So what happened was that around Thanksgiving of my first year, the Highway Patrol had infiltrated the Klan, and naturally I didn't know anything about that, but I did get a call from Tallahassee, from the governor's office, through their channels to me, stating that I should not go home through the Ocala National Forest. And the reason is that my name had come up in Klan meeting in Ocala, and there were some people out there who were hunters who were going to deliberately mistake me for a deer, which would be hard to do because deer don't drive cars. But that was the message, and considering the authority of the message, the suggestion was to go home through Jacksonville, which is what I did, and I also came back that way.
Really?
Yeah. See, and when I say that there wasn't anybody on the faculty that I would discuss things like that with, except the one person who had befriended us that I referred to. But nobody would know that here you are in one of the most difficult disciplines to deal with, and you also have to contend with some extraneous things too.
So the two students you talked about, the one in front and the one in back, they did not cause any problems for you at all?
No, and not only did they not cause any problems, and I'm glad you picked up on that, but it turns out that Thanksgiving, just before the break, they used to stand out. We would be in study hall and in the library, and they would stand out and smoke and talk to each other. And we were wondering, you know, what are these guys studying? And as it turned out, one of them called me, and I went out to talk with him, and he identified himself, both of them, as members of Florida Highway Patrol. Hmm. And they said that, we hope you didn't know this, but we've been here from day one for you, and we have given our reports, and we think that everything is secure and that you're safe, and that we're going to be leaving and you won't see us again. And that's exactly what happened.
Really?
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, where I lived over on 8th Street, I think.
Who did you live with?
Well, my grandfather's brother's name was Merle.
Oh, the Merles.
Yeah, you knew them. Nathaniel Merle, John, and Eloise, and all that.
Yes.
Yeah. And because my grandfather had built that house. In fact, my mother was born in the house that they lived in.
Mm-hmm.
And he had built Chestnut Funeral Home also before they moved to Orlando. And they moved there in 1911. But I think that building was built around the turn of the century. I drove by there the other day, and it still looks very good. But in any event, that's where I stayed the first year. I stayed somewhere else the second year. And there used to be a car dealership across the street. And they had always had a lot of cars in there. But one of them I noticed was the sheriff's car. And it was always parked as if they were watching traffic, ready to leave the yard quickly. But what they were doing was surveilling the house. And one of my cousins was a deputy sheriff, and he told me later what that was all about. But their patrol didn't last as long as the Highway Patrol.
So am I to think, in just what you just mentioned about being admitted, getting into the law school building, the two students you found out later who were there because of your protection, that you wouldn't have any major problems when you applied here the first year at all?
Actually, the answer is there were no, they used to like to say no incidents, and that was true. There were other places there were. I don't know any of the first black students who were admitted to graduate or professional schools that finished. I had it mildly. Some of them did, some of the others didn't, some of them were even shot. I mean, not let alone the threats like in Mississippi, as an example. But I don't know, somebody's done a study on the experiences of the first black people to matriculate at Southern colleges and universities. And it'll be interesting to see, but they were in the news all the time, and there was never anything in the news here.
How did the black community deal with the student who was here at the University of Florida? Or did they deal with you? Or did they know that you were here?
Well, they knew, primarily because of the fact that I've got a lot of relatives here and friends. And so they knew of these relationships. And I was invited to all kinds of things that I declined because I wasn't here for social purposes. But I did go to dinner one Sunday with the principal of one of the high schools here, he and his wife. And so we talked about things that were going on and what have you. But occasionally I would go to church, and then I used to eat not too far from where the Cosbys live.
Fred Grill.
Fred is Fred's Grill, right. And so I got to know some people, and I don't think I went to any of my fraternity meetings or anything like that because I just didn't have the time.
It's that you didn't go because you didn't have the time.
Yes. But the Gainesville Sun wrote very interesting articles. I remember once when I went down, I think that was before credit cards, I'm not sure. But I remember going to a department store, and I wanted to open an account. And the guy said, all right, just sign right here. You don't need to bother with the balance. We know who you are. He just gave me an account.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So really, to correct the history book, which is part of history and also English, that your coming here was actually uneventful, and that there were things that had been put in place that made that happen that you were not aware of, but at some point you did become aware of the police car, the two students in your class, and just the person who just mentioned to you, we know who you are,
right,
because you were here.
Right.
But if I think correctly, do you think because of your family background that had a lot to do with it as well?
In terms of the commercial at the store?
Just because of how you were responding, with you.
Well, I think that that happens in such a routine manner that it wasn't noticeable. You know, you wonder, but then you go on. And then when it's explained to you, told to you, well, it certainly makes sense that that accounted for it. But there was nothing that they had to do, except just be around long enough to find out that there was nothing that they had to do.
Nothing. That's amazing.
Well, the University of Florida, I think, sets the pace for so many things, locally, statewide, regionally, maybe even nationally, that I would expect that from the standpoint of policy, that once the decision had been made, that this is something that they were going to do. And that's, of course, the way that I perceived the governor at the time, Governor Collins, and, of course, Dr. Rice.
Well, when you look at the history of the University of Florida, is there were very little behavior concerning African Americans until the 70s. Even to the point when I came here, it's just that I came for a reason, and I fulfilled that reason, and I did what I had to do. But of course, if I had any concern, I was told the person I needed to talk with, and that person maintained that for me. And then when the first incident that I recall was in the 70s, 70 or 71, and blacks were involved, but it pretty much dealt with the war, I think. There was a lot of demonstration going on, and the two tied in together. So you had pretty much a very pleasant experience. So at this point, if you had to write about that first year here, what would you call it, or what would you say about it? Was it just a typical student that was here on campus, and fortunately, you were a person of color? Do you think anything had to do with this because of your family background? Do you think it had to do anything with, you weren't from Gainesville, you were from the Orlando area? And then also, do you think it had anything to do with your skin color?
Well, I think it had more to do with the fact that the leadership was so positive. And I believe that that influenced the behavior of everybody who came in contact with that.
Do you think your personality has to do with how people responded to you because of just your nature?
I think so.
Because when we look at, I knew of Virgil, but I didn't have very much to do with Virgil Hawkins, who preceded you in applying. But the person who came after you left, George Allen, he's directly opposite. Very outgoing, a lot to talk about, very involved, and you were just here to do what you had to do.
Exactly.
And that was it. Do you think, or I guess, should I ask, have you thought about, you were not very involved in anything that went on in Gainesville, and that you were here to be a student, that that also played a major part in how the response was for you within the community? You think that had anything to do with it?
Well, you're kind of in a, for me, a kind of a cloistered atmosphere. I mean, my life was from my house to law school and vice versa. Say maybe 6.5 days a week, but I always did try to take a break on Sundays afternoons, and I might go out, you know, in the country where I had old relatives, or go over to the Banks's or someplace and Cosby's or somebody, all of them are related except Cullen isn't, but I'd known him all of his life virtually. And so I would have places to go to just break the pattern so that I can start the next day fresh. And but I did not really have the time to socialize and go to social events. Even that summer, I had more time, but I did work for a law firm because my whole thing was focus.
Was that law firm an African-American law firm here in Gainesville?
No, in Miami.
Miami?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Interesting. So really, the first student of color at the University of Florida could say that his year here was uneventful. You were just a student.
Well, yeah, my whole tenure, the whole 3 semesters that I was here, totally uneventful. I never had any apprehensions about anything except concern about those episodes that I mentioned to you. But other than that, I never had any problems with them.
None.
None whatsoever.
Why do you think it didn't happen?
Well, in the first place, I got along well with people and got along well with my classmates and I think with the faculty, with my instructors, because the rest of them you see, and but you didn't have any dealings with them. And you know, moot court, things like that went well. My writing was good. And I think that basically the fact that I knew how to get along with people made a lot of difference too, in terms of being accepted. And you never know, in those days, I don't know if they still do it now or not, but you would never know whether you have been accepted, because people really tend to have their own, bear their own burdens. And they're nice, they talk, and then they're gone. And I remember that the students had a way of stomping in the classroom. If somebody said something that was funny or even studious or some combination, especially the first time a person would say something that gets their attention. And I used to make it a point, you know, to hold up my hand as often as I wanted to, and without being waited to be called on, because I just didn't want to be passive about what I did. And over a period of time in your reading and whatnot, you see certain phrases that kind of subtly stick in your mind, and at some point later you have occasion to write them. But I remember one day I had been calling about something, and I said, well, the weight of authority is, and those words just triggered off a massive foot stomping in the class. And at that point, I knew that I'd been accepted by the students.
Really?
It's weird, but it's true.
That's amazing. If you had to paraphrase your three semesters here, what statement would you say that would pretty much describe that period for you?
Well, it was an intense period, and one that I had considered even after leaving, that I just have to let this go for now. And I think that maybe in 5 years that I can get all this out of my system. Not anything that was imposed on me, but things that just emerge subconsciously, the pressures and stress that nobody probably ever had before. And maybe never had since. I can't say that, of course, but I said, well, maybe I'll just reapply and start from scratch in 5 years. Then that grew to 10, then to 20. And because of the way that it really changed my life, like, I didn't get to do what I wanted to do in Florida. Couldn't find a comparable work, so had to make up for that in other ways. But I learned from my best friend here that when we were talking a couple of years ago, that I had suppressed a great deal of my experiences here. And it's like in so many other things, I guess, you certainly recall the good things. Of course, they were preponderant. But some of the others that get suppressed may not even manifest themselves to you consciously as an example. It took me about 20 years to be able to say the words University of Florida.
Really?
And I mean, it was just that, you know, crushing. And I could talk to anybody about the University of Florida if they brought it up, but I never brought it up. And like that second incident that I told you about being 4 minutes late to class, I'd forgotten about that totally. And he mentioned it, he brought it up the last time we were talking. And he said, yeah, George, I remember that time. He said, that was really a bad deal. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, now I see. He said, you've suppressed a lot of that stuff. So, but it was just the negatives. And I'm sure that by talking with people like that, and even in talking with you, and I noticed in talking with some of these other interviewers, they didn't know it, but it's like Hillary was talking about being cathartic, you know, to even get some of this stuff out. And it's important, and that's one reason that, yeah, I would have certainly agreed to any interview you wanted to do, but the reason I had agreed with the others is it sparks your recall. And as an example, the story about South Carolina, I only thought about that yesterday when I was talking with somebody.
Really?
Well, you know, I remembered it and I laughed about it with other people, but I mean in terms of the context of the University of Florida as a contrast, this is the first time I thought about it or mentioned it.
This is going to be a question that I find that I have been asked and I'm going to ask you. If you had to do it again, would you?
Well, the answer is yes, but not as a first.
Not as a first?
Absolutely not.
Why not as a first?
Because by the time that the third, fourth, or fifth student comes along, I think there would be an acclimatization on the part of the faculty. They'd be comfortable with the notion. You wouldn't be just bucking a 105-year-old trend, or even not just trends, but law. And some of the pressures, I mean, you have a feeling that people who don't wish you well are watching everything you do, and that people like being in a glass bubble. And people who do want you to do well are also watching. And you want to disappoint these people, but you don't want to disappoint these. And you're in a kind of a glass bubble you don't want to be in the first place. And you know that people want you to exceed just by virtue, as they want for Obama, for example, to exceed. And not that these were equal, but I think the principle applies that, and then Florida was a relatively small state, good communications, things that happen, but I do believe that for me, it would have been better retroactively if I had been fifth instead of first.
My experience being here when they were only 50, and I didn't have anyone in my class, and there were days there were problems that I had to deal with professionally, academically, and I'm quite sure I could have gotten it on campus, but I wouldn't have gotten, I think, what I felt. And when I went to the person to help me, and he said to me, that's what you get for being where you are. And the way he said it, it hit me and it did something to me internally. I didn't get the response that I wanted, and I didn't ever get the response, but I was able to resolve the matter anyway. Did you ever have anyone articulate to you that maybe you should not have been here, and that the experience that you encountered was just what you were going to get, or what you thought you was going to get was not applicable at that period?
Well, as Jim Glass has said, you don't know what to expect. You come believing that you can cope with whatever comes at you. You know that you're not going to have certain types of support that would be available to a student today. Even later when you came along, there wasn't enough. And I imagine today is certainly better than it was at either of those two periods. I guess I never expected divorce, always expected the best result. And so it's disappointing if that doesn't materialize. And it's probably something that you try not to dwell on, because you don't know whether this happened or that happened, it could have happened, but so the conjecture just goes out of the window. You're just better off without that.
May I ask the reason that you did not graduate, or you left before the graduation?
Well, it's the combination of things we've already talked about, basically. Major concern was the fact that if enough of those untoward incidents happen, you have to reapply or to request waivers to continue. And I wanted to save mine for later, because I figured that I could reapply, and I would probably be able to resume where I left off. But I wouldn't have cared if I'd have had to start all over, because the climate would have been different. So I think it's as much the climate as it was the time and the timing that caused this not to be what I wanted to be, because my objective was to leave here with a law degree. And I thought a couple times about reapplying, or maybe even applying someplace else, but 5 years goes to 10, and 10 to 20, and after a while you decide, well, I better just stay with these other things I'm doing that I like, and just let that go.
Do you feel that you were not successful here, that you were a failure?
Well, I don't feel that I was successful as I wanted to be, because my objectives were not met. Insofar as the progress I made along with my class, I feel that it was comparable. But I also feel that I had, a couple problems like the ones that I described that do not help your grade point average.
It is difficult, and I guess I am one of the persons that should be talking to you, because I remember that I didn't do very well in the chemistry class, and I did do well. Not that I couldn't do the work, it's just that I was the only one, and I was told quite frequently I was the first one. And that does have something to do with how you internalize that and deal with that situation. Let's change the focus. Because you were the first one, you talked about more than you know that you talked about, because you did prove that you could come, and you did prove that you could be successful. And the question is, what is success? For the students that are here today and the future students that are going to come, they deal with problems today that I think that they internalize more than you and I would have put on. I'm dark. I have the right to certain things that they're not giving me the rights to. And that many of them are not completing what they started out. What kind of advice would you give a person who's going to come to the University of Florida? A student told me the other day that they just can't deal with the pressure and being lonely. And I thought, how could you be lonely when there are 4,000 of you all on campus? There are 50,000 here, but hell, when I was here, there were 20,000, and there were only 50 of us. And we graduated because that was the goal. What would you say to somebody that would hear this and see this and can take a point from you in the sense of to encourage them?
Well, I've been really, I've been back to the university a number of times, and I've been active in the Alumni Association and other things along the way. And I was just, and I come back to football games and things, but I was just, it was really interesting how these students perceived me. I noticed, you know, because I hadn't been around people that age in a long time, and certainly not in large numbers. But a good number of them were interested in those ceremonies and things yesterday, and stood out in the sun and all those other things. And naturally, I thank them for that. But they were using words like brave. They would never say they would never have done anything like that. Thanks for your courage and things I never thought of in that context, because I didn't feel that anything untoward was, when I came, was going to happen, and I wasn't looking for any particular favors. I thought that I would make it because, you know, I was mature enough and responsible enough to make that happen. But people today seem to be very race conscious, and so I think that that could relate to the sense of loneliness, but I never felt that way when I was here. So I don't know how to explain that to somebody who does feel that way.
It's very interesting. Because you came from a family of successful people, and you've mentioned the names, and I know a few of them. Because you were successful at Morehouse and so forth, do you think that pretty much helped you to be able to do what you did and your interpretation of what you did, the significance of it?
Well, I think, yeah, and also being in the Air Force was helpful because, you know, you learn discipline, and that's important. In everything that you do. So I think that overall it was I was probably as good a selectee as they may have found to come here because I didn't bring any malice, any negative attitudes. They didn't know that. But they did ask, all the reporters asked, are you in the NAACP? Is NAACP paying your way here? I mean, and they seem to have a very deep interest in that one question. And then somebody said, yeah, well, you know, George went to the same school that produced Martin Luther King. And, you know, totally irrelevant, but I guess it was real to them. And but there wasn't anything there except for me to say, yeah, I'm a member of the NAACP, I'm a student member. I wasn't active, but I wasn't going to say no, because people expected you to say yeah. I mean, to be what you say you are, and of course I was. So I felt they didn't have anything to do with my admission. So I'm going to tell the truth, because there was a time when black people were ostracized for being in the NAACP in Florida. I don't know if you remember that or not, but people like teachers and others who were civil type employees of various governments were really banned from openly being a member of the NAACP, a penalty of losing their jobs. So preachers and doctors and people who had independent sources of income were the ones who supported and promoted the NAACP. And eventually it became an acceptable organization because of what they do. And there's those people who had all those adverse attitudes died and went away. Then succeeding generations found it more acceptable, and today it didn't make that much difference whether somebody is or isn't. But in 1958, there was still concern.
No concern. Mm-hmm.
They were concerned.
Oh, they were concerned.
Yes.
For the tape that's going to be here forever, and students do listen to them, and we think that they're being used for teaching tools, and I'll be collecting history of persons who've done things that people thought they couldn't do. Charles Chestnut, county commissioner, sat on the school board. How was that possible? I think he did that because that's what he wanted to do, and we supported him. Now Cynthia is there, his wife. And what I found is that people that are doing things are people that are collected together, and those persons outside of that little circle doesn't understand what you go through in that circle, but you have a goal and you fulfill that goal. I'm quite sure this is going to be used many times as a teaching tool in class. Is there one, two, three or points that you could say that you would tell a person that feel that the law school is not taking as many of us as they should admit? And if they're admitted, what should they expect? And I think sometimes students, and I have spent more time in the last year communicating with students of color, what we see that we want and how we want to get that is very different than what society do. What can you say to them from your experience if they want to pursue being here, or was it good that you came here?
Well, if not me, then somebody.
Well, of course it's good because we're talking about it today.
Right.
And I don't think any person above the student level deals with the matter that you were here and you did not get the law degree. I don't think that's been a question why you didn't get it, but I think people perceive the reason why. I always tell people that being here was important, that process alone. There are people that can deal with that. But what would you say to them if they had to look at this and ask, wanted for, to know, can I do it or should I do it?
Well, I think in the best of all worlds, the answer is yeah, do it, try. Meaning, prepare yourself for the challenges that are there if you do and that are there if you don't. But to develop some sort of a discipline and something that you like, because for one thing, I don't think that there is really, from my experience, any prerequisite course that prepares you to study in law school. I think that you could do well with English. The judge I worked for had an undergraduate degree in plumbing.
Really?
Yeah.
And he became a judge?
He became a lawyer, and then he became a judge.
Really?
He later committed suicide. I don't know.
If that was the reason why.
Well, that was because of money. But he and a minister in Miami had invested the church's funds surreptitiously, expecting certain results. And when they didn't materialize, the numbers were so large that he just wasn't able to deal with it. But that was years after I had worked for him, because when I worked for him, hopefully he wasn't doing those kind of things. But his undergraduate degree was from Tuskegee, and it was applied.
Mm. Interesting background.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you've been successful?
Oh, in what I do?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, not only that, but it's something that I really like. I think it's something that the time is right for it, and we are poised to do some very significant things with even this one facility. And the good thing is that another fellow and I are developing it ourselves, and we will own it and operate it. And it's not as if we were consulting to them to build it for their own account. This is better, because as long as there's gas coming out of the landfill, you'll have income. And in fact, it'll be a small utility. So that's not a bad deal.
Excellent. Have you found life to be much different for you in the North compared to the South?
My preference would have been there when we left Florida. And at first it was kind of problematic, because I just didn't like it. I didn't like the weather. The people were different. As I mentioned before, I would probably still be in Miami because what I wanted to do required being in a large place in order to have a population to draw business from.
Okay.
But it's okay, and it's not where we are in that cold, and it's not a problem. And as long as my parents were still living, getting here was easy enough to do.
Would you know what you know today, do what you did back 50 years ago again?
Well, yeah, I would come to the University of Florida. I would go to law school. I probably would not have been the first student. I would have waited, and not to see how others make out, but just for the climate to improve, because you know that there's going to be resistance. You just don't know where it's coming from. And as long as it isn't overt, obvious, you feel you can deal with it. Maybe you could deal better with it if you knew where it was coming from, because you could either avoid it or confront it. And this way, if you tuned in to the reasons for your being here studying, then you don't have time to dwell on those kind of things anyway. But yeah, I would certainly want to come to the University of Florida and stay in Florida the rest of my life.
Just yesterday, the three students who integrated the public school system was together, and I was a boy, and there were two girls. And we were together to do why we did what we did. And as the young lady who was in 12th grade, who had a much difficult time because she was the only one, Reverend T.A. Wright's daughter, LaVond. And she said, to ask the question, why did you do it? She said, because why, my father asked me to.
Oh, mm-hmm.
She said, and I was a good student, so I was going to go do it. But the point that she said, that she was amazed at how she was treated. the response she got. I was the boy. I just didn't deal with the people that were there, but then I was amazed at what had been said about the person of color, and was I going to have to prove that I was not that, or what I had to do. But my goal was, I was here to get a high school diploma, and I was going to get a diploma. I had to do that. That's what the family sent me for. Do you think students today are the same, made from the same background, have the same values that you had and still have today?
Well, I would hope so. But as I say, I know that they have more temptations and other things that didn't exist when I was here. And they have more latitude to do things because that they didn't have maybe even as recently as last year when they were still at home. And so they got a process of maturation to go through and still do their homework, get their studies successfully completed. I don't know about dropouts. Is that a big problem here?
Mm-hmm.
Retention?
Mm-hmm. Many of the students come and here, we have the largest now. I think there's something like 4,500 people of color.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, that does not just mean Negroes.
Right.
But it's amazing to compare those persons who are American-born in the South, those from the North, and those from the islands are strictly different. But we put them all in the same
category.
That's good. But they can't deal with the point is, one girl just said to me she just can't deal with students not dealing with her. And my point is, why is that important?
Yes.
And some of the things that they wish for, to me, is so surface. But that's the way that society is today. Do you find it amazing that I'm talking to you as an oral, to do an oral history for the University of Florida, that's going to be a part of our archives, and that we don't think of you as a person that did not fulfill the goal? I think, and I said this to a student this morning, George fulfilled his goal. He came here. No one had done it, and he applied. He was admitted. He came as a student. Why did he leave? I said, well, there could have been many reasons. It could have been illness. It could have been finance. It could have been he changed his mind. He just didn't want to deal with the situation. And she went, oh. And then she asked me, was he successful? Were you successful? I'm asking you that. Come in.
Okay. I've got 10:45.
All right, let me just ask this last question.
Okay.
And we'll be back. Don't go, give me about 5 minutes.
Sure.
Do you feel that you were successful here?
Yes, in terms of the quality of my experiences overall, yes. I would be concerned that I don't have a law degree from the University of Florida. And I felt that it would be possible to return and complete that, but it just didn't happen.
Do you want an honorary even?
Not really.
Not really?
No.
Are you too, do you think that you're not able to come up? You're too past the age to come back now?
Well, I know what's involved. And, you know, life intervenes.
Yes.
And so I'm really content and I like what I'm doing.
Well, I want to thank you for being back here 50 years from the time that you were here. And I'm quite sure, I don't know if you're aware of how the university has changed. And to think that you're still taking the time to come to the University of Florida, and your presence here made a substantial difference. And your name is heard more than you can imagine. And the students do appreciate you being here, and thank you for coming. And I'm so sorry that you didn't get that law degree.
Well, you have to say it was really one of those things, without being dismissive, but it really was. You know, timing and circumstance have a lot to do with anything.
I see. Well, I do hope you enjoyed the today that's put forth for you, and tomorrow, because this is a very important time in history. And I think in the next few years, we have reached a plateau from the first 5 students, and then we now have close to 4,500, but unfortunately,
right,
we can't say how many of those were born and raised as African Americans.
Right.
I think we're gonna see it begin to go down.
Hmm. Probably not.
Well, yes, well, some of the students just can't deal with it when they get here, and the things that they're dealing with are things that I think that you didn't find difficult. I never asked if people want to sit next to you, or is that important? And the attitude of the professors to you, you didn't bring that up, so I guess that was not important. You went through, you got grades and so forth. It's just that what people see as being what they're entitled to today is much different than what probably you would want and think. And I want to thank you for being here today, and I want to thank you for this. When we simply take this and have it transcribed, we will simply give you a copy.
Okay.
And if you want to delete, add, we'll be more than happy to. And this will be here for years to come.
Okay.
Thank you. I've enjoyed doing this oral history with you at this period in history.
Well, thank
50
you.
Years from the time you were here.
Oh, thank you, my pleasure. And it certainly doesn't seem like 50 years ago.
It doesn't.
No, time has really flown.
But it's evident that you enjoy what you're doing, and so that's why maybe it's going so fast, because I really look at students who I taught 20 years ago and today to think about the difference between what it was then and now. It doesn't seem like 20 years, but it has gone by. Thank you so much, and we're going to end this oral history for the University of Florida with the first African-American student, George Stark. I'm looking forward to doing one with the one that came after you, George Allen. Do you know Mr. Allen?
Mm-hmm.
He's a very interesting person, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. We have been on a couple of panels and different things together.
But thank you.
Uh-huh.
You have a good day.
Well, thank you, and you too, Joe.
All right. Thank you for this oral history with George Stark, the first African-American student to attend the University of Florida, who is now living in Maryland, and he's an investing banker, and they're doing something with green gas. And he's back here, I think the first time in 20 years.
Is that right?
Thank you.